Your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to come to terms with what can only be described as the great American malaise, okay? When Jimmy Carter gave his very ill-fated malaise speech, It was a political disaster for him because he was talking about American malaise in terms of our role in the world and the way we felt about things. And actually what we were dealing with at the time were things like gas lines that we had, an energy shortage, basically an economic crisis, and combined with the hostages being taken in Iran, where things did not look right in terms of the government. But I would suggest that despite the fact that we're economically booming right now, despite the fact that I do think you have a president who's going to be an overwhelming favorite for re-election, there remains a general American malaise having to do with our institutions, media, educational institutions, institutions in this country that simply aren't up to snuff. And some of those institutions even include a institution that's very sacred to many of us, baseball. And here's the one way I would put this question. I want to get into the Houston Astros scandal in just a moment, because this was one of those great American stories, is going from worst to first, a really hapless franchise that was considered to be pathetic, then becoming world champions and the most powerful team in baseball, at least according to many measures. And it turns out the whole time they were cheating. I mean, really, they were cheating in a stupid way. Did that explain their success? Not entirely, but did it contribute to their success? Almost certainly. We'll get to that in a moment. But the context I wanted to put for this has to do with just looking back a couple of weeks. And I think part of our American malaise has to do with impeachment. No, I do. In this sense, the impeachment thing was a stupid idea from the beginning, and I do think I get to say I told you so. The fact that it has done nothing to damage Trump, it has only strengthened Trump, ought to show Democrats and the Adam Schiffs and Jerry Nadlers and Nancy Pelosi's of this world that the American people can't stand for it. And part of the reason that they seem to be so surprised at this is they think about the Bill Clinton impeachment. It's not even conceivable that someone would be impeached the way that Bill Clinton was for presidential wrongdoing. I mean, President Trump survived the Access Hollywood tape. We have different standards now. Nobody brings up about Mike Bloomberg the fact that he had a marriage that lasted for 18 years. It was a long time ago. He has been together for about 20 years with his girlfriend, his live-in girlfriend, who was a live-in first lady for the city of New York. Her name is Diana Taylor. She apparently is very brilliant. She apparently is also somebody who was a lifelong Republican. She just switched to the Democratic Party when Trump did. And she's someone who's had her own career as an economist and an academic. And okay, great. But the fact is, can you imagine 20 years ago somebody running for president and being a leading candidate who was living with his girlfriend? And by the way, when you're talking about people in their 60s, probably, and one guy in his late 70s, that would be Mayor Bloomberg, and probably the term girlfriend is weird. But the idea being that the sort of stuff that Americans would never tolerate. I remember when Bill Clinton was running for office, it was considered such a big deal that he used marijuana that he had to explain that I smoked it, but I didn't inhale. And I was one of the very few people in the country who thought, okay, I kind of understand what he's talking about. He's talking about being in social situations and they hand you a joint and you take a puff and then you don't breathe it into your lungs. Because Bill Clinton apparently has never been a smoker, though he did find use for cigars. And for those who don't remember the Clinton scandals, we'll leave that alone. The idea that today somebody who used marijuana at one time, I mean, President Obama wrote in his book about using marijuana and extensively and cocaine and no problem. Now, one may say it's great that in America we are more judgmental, we are less judgmental, pardon me, that we are much more accepting of human fallibility. But that also goes to, I think, rejecting the kind of extremism about people who are your political opponents that are represented in our tweet of the day. We have a tweet of the day from Maxine Waters. Greg, do we have the actuality there
to
introduce
it? To the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
Okay, Maxine Waters, a member of the United States Congress, tweets out, "It's not enough for Barr to resign. I want him out of DOJ." Well, that's what resigning means, Congresswoman Waters. He resigns. He's out of DOJ, right? Disbarred, disgraced, and investigated for obstruction of justice. Barr sabotaged Mueller report, was in on Ukraine plot, and now he wants to free Trump's criminal friends. In my estimation, they all, A-L-L capitalized, belong in jail. In other words, lock them up, lock them up, lock them up. I mean, really, this is not helpful. She was also making the same call on MSNBC.
Listen. The American people should be focused on Barr, and we should all be joining with all of those federal prosecuting attorneys who have decided that he should step down, that he should resign.
All those prosecuting attorneys, there were four of them. Look, do I think that this whole matter, the Roger Stone case, where tomorrow he's going to be sentenced, that this thing has been well handled? And was the pardoning of Rod Blagojevich, was that a standard, another indication that somehow the old standards don't apply? And if President Trump ends up pardoning Roger Stone right after he's sentenced, which I think is an entirely a possibility, will that be another signal that the old standards don't apply? Here is Rod Blagojevich today talking to the media as he walked out of jail. He served 8 years of his 14-year sentence. Here is the former Democratic governor of Illinois and former participant in The Apprentice, reveling in his commutation of sentence from President Trump. Listen.
We want to express our most profound and everlasting gratitude to President Trump. How do you properly thank someone who's given you back the freedom that was stolen from you? He didn't have to do this. He's a Republican president. I was a Democratic governor. And doing this does nothing to help his politics.
I'm returning home today from a long exile. A freed political prisoner. I want to say again to the people of Illinois who twice elected me governor, I didn't let you down. I would have let you down if I gave into this.
If I gave into this? What does giving into this mean? And the point that Rod Blagojevich is one of many, many, many corrupt Illinois politicians and deeply corrupt. Is he now planning a comeback? I mean, maybe that's the point of Trump's pardon. Who knows? Maybe Rod Blagojevich can run as an independent or challenge the current pathetic governor of Illinois, Pritzker, and challenge him in a Democratic. Who knows? Or maybe he can get his own TV show. about Rod Blagojevich coming out of prison and trying for a new and better life. This is all extraordinary. And I mentioned the idea of baseball because the one thing, and I think it's one of the things people love about American sports, is the better team wins. They do. It's based upon not bad judgment of the voters or judges. It's based upon how fast you can throw a pitch, how close over the plate you can deliver it, or with what kind of twist and how you bat and strategy and all of that. But the point is, the idea of a pathetic loser actually winning the world championship, that's not going to happen. And that's not true of the Houston Astros. They had some outstanding players with them. But it turns out for people who have been living in a sheltered life, it turns out that for several years, they've been running this crazy situation where they stole signs electronically, then transmitted it to people near the batter's box who would bang on drums to make a sound alerting the batters to what kind of pitch was coming. And that allegedly conveyed a real advantage. One of the greatest players of the game today, Aaron Judge of the Yankees, said this about the Houston Astros scandal and the fact that people on opposition teams are speaking out and speaking out so strongly. It's unprecedented. Listen to Aaron Judge.
It's about, you know, winning a World Series, you know, winning a World Series with your team and fighting till the very end, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears you put into the game, you know, to be that last team that's standing, you know, and to hear that you got cheated out of that opportunity, that's tough to kind of, you know, let go.
What did he say about, can we play that again, Jeremy?
It's about, Greg? You know, winning a World Series, you know, winning a World Series with your team and fighting till the very end, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears you put into the game, you know, to be that last team that's standing, you know, and to hear that you got cheated out of that opportunity, that's tough to kind
of, cheated, you know, I think he said cheated out of that opportunity. I had thought for a moment that Aaron Judge, and playing for the New York Yankees, had used the term, had been chewed out of that opportunity, which, yeah, my spidey sense is tingling. It was, which would have been a very, very bad use of the language for someone playing for a team that represents the city and the country with by far the largest Jewish population. And by the way, this has nothing to do, because the people who were involved in this cheating scandal were Jews and Gentiles and a lot of Latino people and some African-American people. This is not one kind of ethnic scandal. It's a scandal that ran through the entire organization, and they all deserve blame. Justin Turner, another great player for the Dodgers, and everybody in America really, really secretly would love to see another Yankees-Dodgers World Series like they had in the old days back in the 1950s. That would be classic, wouldn't it? L.A. versus New York. And Dodgers versus Yankees like it used to be in New York versus Brooklyn. Justin Turner from the Dodgers was actually critical of Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball. Listen.
He just set the precedent. He set a weak precedent. You know, calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal. I mean, I don't know if the commissioner's ever won anything in his life. For him to devalue it the way he did yesterday is just tells me how out of touch he is with the players in this game.
What he's talking about is this growing clamor, and I don't think we're done with it, to try to actually have the World Series trophy taken away, or at least World Championship put with an asterisk when the Astros won it. And people care about that. People care about that deeply. And Jim Gray on Fox News also slammed the commissioner, Rob Manfred, for failing to lead sufficiently on this issue.
Doesn't matter who you're a fan of. If you're a fan of baseball, you've got to be upset with this. The job of the commissioner is to uphold the integrity. He has had a massive failure of judgment on all ends. He's antagonized the fans, the players, the very owners that he works for, and the media. Ball four. He is out. I mean, it is just crazy what he has done. He has said and mocked the reporter who broke the story. He has called the trophy, his name is on the trophy, a piece of metal. He said he didn't do more, and he's sorry that he didn't do more when he knew about it. Who is advising Rob Manfred? I mean, come on, he just looks so foolish in this, and he should have suspended the players. Then he allows Jim Crane to go up there and say, it had no impact? Right. Well, if it had no impact, why did they do it? If Crane. It had no impact, why are you apologizing? He should have been suspended immediately for his comments because they are detrimental to the game of baseball.
Yeah,
Crane, and the players should be suspended. The whole thing is just, it's a farce, it's ridiculous. And the players now, some of the players are saying, you know, these guys should be attacked.
Right.
And it's out of control, and the commissioner is not doing anything to make this better. In fact, he's making it much, much worse.
Okay, there's a Vegas odds and the over-under on Astros batters being deliberately hit by pitches in the 2020 season. And of course, it's 83.5%. And 83.5 incidents of people being deliberately hit in the course of a season. That's one every other game.
Strike three, you're out.
And by the way, the idea that the Jim Gray said, ball four, you're out. No, ball four, you walk. And that might be the right idea for Rob Manfred. LeBron James from another sport sent out a tweet. And maybe this goes with our tweet of the day. He says, listen, I know I don't play baseball, but I am in sports. And I know if somebody cheated me out of winning the title and I found out about it, I would be effing irate. I mean, like uncontrollable about what I would do. Listen here, baseball commissioner. Listen to your players speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, et cetera, about this. Literally, the ball is in your court, or should I say field, and you need to fix this for the sake of sports. I think there does need to be something that is done here. Look, the point that people make in defense of the Astros is they didn't do this cheating scandal, this spying on the signs, when they were on the road. They only did it at home. And they actually had a better road record without this. They did. And so apparently it was not only illegal and dishonest what they did, it wasn't very effective. Because, and you can say, well, but there are certain players who did benefit, even if the team itself had a worse record at home than on the road. And the previous bans for players, one of the greatest players in the game, Shoeless Joe Jackson, if you ever saw A Field of Dreams, you know something about it. The original title of that book and movie was Shoeless Joe. But Shoeless Joe Jackson was banned from baseball. And he was barely involved in throwing the 1919 World Series. Pete Rose wasn't allowed into the Hall of Fame because he bet on his own team. He didn't bet against his own team. He bet on them. And the Astros players, probably not headed toward the Hall of Fame, I'm thinking. But an astronomer who is headed to any astronomy Hall of Fame, Guillermo Gonzalez, joins us to talk about mysterious signals from deep space. Deeply intriguing. Coming up on the MedVet Show.
Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, we mentioned before on the air this report which is now confirmed in all of these different scientific journals, about mysterious radio wave signals that come at 16-day intervals, and exactly the same intervals. And they come from deep, deep space, 500 million light years away. So what is going on here exactly? Nobody better to speak to about that than my guest, Guillermo Gonzalez. He's assistant professor of astronomy at Ball State University. He's also a senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He received a PhD in astronomy from University of Washington and has done postdoctoral work at University of Texas and University of Washington, and has had fellowships grants from NASA and the Templeton Foundation and the National Science Foundation, etc. Dr. Gonzalez, great to speak to you again. And they say that they cite in a press account the Max Planck Institute that says that although they last for only a thousandth of a second, there are now hundreds of records of these enigmatic sources. And this is supposedly one of the greatest mysteries involving space and our universe right now. Would I be right in guessing that if these emanate from 500 million light years away, they are at least 500 million years old?
That's right. In astronomy, when we look at distant objects, we're really looking back in time. Cosmology or astronomy is really like using a giant natural time machine. The farther back, the farther out into the universe that you look, the farther back in time that you see. And so, yeah, these objects really are very far away. And some are much farther away than others, maybe up to 3 billion light years. And others, like this one you just mentioned, is in our cosmic neighborhood.
Well, our cosmic neighborhood at 500 million light years away, a light year is the distance that it requires a light to travel. So, in other words, the light... And you just mentioned 3 billion light years away?
Yeah. Some of we believe are, you know, 3 billion, at least the ones we can see, 3 billion light years away, and perhaps there may be even farther ones. This one is one of the closer ones that was discovered. And you mentioned that it repeats every 16 and a half days or so. That's the new thing about it. This is the first one that's been discovered to be... repeating in a periodic way, in a regular way.
Is there any possibility in your mind, Dr. Gonzalez, that this signal could emanate from some 500 million year old civilization or form of life that far distant in another galaxy?
Well, indeed, you asked that, but astronomers even have been speculating as to the source of these signals, and one of the explanations that's been put forward is that maybe in a super advanced alien civilization is beaming these signals out into space. Now, admittedly, even the people who propose this say that's down the line in terms of probability. But just going back in history a little bit. That was also one of the ideas put forth to account for the pulses that were discovered back in the 1960s, radio pulses coming from certain regions of the sky. And these new objects were called pulsars. And one of the explanations was called little green men, or LGMs, because the signals were so steady, so periodic. People didn't know at the time what could produce such a steady signal. Well, now we know. We know they're spinning stars called neutron stars is what explains these pulsars. So there are phenomena in nature that are very regular. They can produce beam radiation in a very regular pattern, and they include a rotating body or one body orbiting around another body, the way the Earth orbits around the sun. And so one of those two could be the explanation for the periodic nature of this object. And I should say that they are found in different regions of the sky, and several have been associated with individual galaxies, as you say, like hundreds of millions or even billions of light years away. And so it seems to me unlikely that a civilization in one galaxy would devise this method of communication, and then another civilization in another completely separate galaxy somewhere else in the universe would devise pretty much the same method of communication. That's what we'd have to invoke to account for, say, a civilization creating these radio bursts. I think that seems unlikely. If they're maybe all coming from the same galaxy, you might imagine maybe a civilization living within that galaxy would be making all these weird radio bursts. But no, they're all separate galaxies, and so I think it would make it unlikely that it would be due to an advanced civilization.
Okay, if we're talking about something that happened or these radio bursts originating 500 million years ago, which is a staggering amount of time to even think about, that kind of reduces the chances, doesn't it, even if there is some form of life elsewhere in the universe, of actually making contact with that form of life, doesn't it?
That's right. Let's just say for the moment that these are produced by alien civilizations. We don't know exactly yet just how common these radio bursts are. They seem to be not too uncommon when you consider that we're probably only detecting a tiny fraction of the ones that actually occur, because most of the time we're not looking over the entire sky to detect these things. But I think you're right. I think from other arguments also, I think the probability of there being more than one civilization per galaxy is pretty small. At most, you know, the probabilities are probably showing us that there might be one civilization every tens or hundreds of galaxies, if even that much, if there are even others. So, yeah, I think the probability of communication or contact with them is very low.
I know that in the past, you've written very persuasively about how unlikely it is that we contact some alien civilization. Has the SETI program, which we've put a lot of money into, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, has that come up with a lot of intriguing information?
Well, I agree. I personally wouldn't be part of a SETI research program just because I think the probability of success is very small. But if somebody wants to put their own private funds into the program and use privately funded equipment, I think that's all fine. And they can search, and they are, you know, using more and more advanced technology every year. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, they married computers to radio telescopes, allowing the astronomers to search literally millions of frequencies simultaneously. And we built ever more sensitive radio telescopes and are able to search for ever weaker radio signals and encoded signals. And so, you know, if they want to keep doing that, that's fine, as long as they use their own private funds. And who knows? We might be surprised. but they are doing something useful, and that they're showing that the probability of them existing is very low because they haven't found any signals.
Right. And I know that you've argued in the past that given the fact that there is no evidence anywhere for any form of life anywhere other than right here on Earth, the basic argument that you use with all these billions and billions of stars, there must be something out there. If you have a singularity, that doesn't really argue for its repetition elsewhere at all, does it?
That's right. You know, there are two camps among scientists here, and then one is that we're extremely improbable and we were really a unique event in the history of the universe. And another camp that says, well, there are others and we just haven't looked hard enough or long enough, and eventually we'll find them.
Well, we will keep posted on that biggest news out of this world. What about big news in this world? Do microaggressions and racism actually cause cancer? A NBC TV show says yes. We'll get to it coming up. And on the Michael Medved show, there is a piece that I want to get to at greater length later in the show called Why the Left is Losing. And it's profoundly important and very insightful. It's written by a professor at University of London named Eric Kaufman. And one of his basic ideas is that if you look around the world, it's not just the United States, it's not just Britain, it's pretty much everywhere. Traditional left-wing parties that have dominated politics in many countries are in deep, deep trouble. And I think there's evidence that the Democrats are in deep, deep trouble in our country. And part of their trouble, Professor Kaufman argues, is political correctness and the new religion of PC tyranny, which has put off many, many Americans who might otherwise considering voting for a more moderate left-leaning candidate, and has helped Boris Johnson in Great Britain, has helped Donald Trump here in the United States, has helped throughout Europe, and he goes through the countries, country after country, where left-wing parties have had their worst showings ever. Ever. The Labour Party in Britain, since it was just getting started in 1935, has never had a worse election outcome than it did last year. What, the worst! That's Jeremy Corbyn for you. In any event, part of the problem he sees with the left-wing parties is political correctness, and this comes up with two things, two stories, one from Britain and one from the United States. The one from the United States has to do with a TV show, and it's a TV show on NBC. I will confess I have never seen it and really never want to. It's called New Amsterdam. And it's a TV show about a hospital. It's based on Bellevue Hospital. It's based on a book about Bellevue Hospital. And it ends up being not just a TV show, but as you're going to hear in this clip, a means of communicating ideology, a means of communicating a worldview. And it's hardly entertaining. Because in this scene, there's a 13-year-old patient who has four benign tumors growing in his stomach. And his doctor, Dr. Helen Sharp, who's one of the fictional doctors in this medical show, discovers that the boy has elevated levels of stress hormones. And then the staff psychiatrist, Dr. Iggy Frome, who's played by a Canadian, veteran Canadian actor named Tyler Labine, he comes up to explain to the child that the real cause of the tumors is racism. No, really, listen to this explanation of pseudoscience.
I have one question that was not on my list from earlier. Why wouldn't the librarian let you take out those books?
I don't know.
Well, I think you do know. I think you know it so well that it is eating you up inside and it is causing you to be sick. Why wouldn't the librarian let you take out those books?
Because of the color of my skin? But she's not racist.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second, but you know, racism is so deeply ingrained in our society that people, myself included, we often don't realize that we're perpetuating it.
So, like, when people give me nicknames I don't want because my name is different?
Yes, that is a microaggression because of the color of your skin.
What about when adults tell me I speak really good English?
Because of the color of your skin.
Or when people assume I only got into my school because I'm diverse?
Yes.
Yes. This is extraordinary. And the emphasis on microaggressions, particularly so-called racist microaggressions, isn't that a dangerous road to go down? Because what it means is you're looking for the hidden motives by people around you who may be perfectly innocent, but they're hidden motives. Of asking you or commenting that you speak perfectly good English, that all of a sudden this is going to be judged as an association with a profound evil. And racism is profoundly evil. There's this story which I think relates to this because it also involves hospitals. And the headline from Sky News over in Great Britain is the National Health Service staff can now refuse to treat racist or sexist patients under new rules. Okay, this is extraordinary. In other words, you're not allowed to discriminate on patients you take based on race or any other factor. This is, by the way, it's only for non-emergency care with the NHS. But still, what they're saying is currently staff can refuse to treat non-critical patients who are verbally aggressive or physically violent toward them. But these protections will now extend to any harassment, bullying, or discrimination, including homophobic, sexist, or racist remarks. Ambulance workers are among those worst affected by abuse. Health Secretary Matt Hancock, and this, of course, is in the Conservative government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson, wrote to all NIH staffers yesterday to announce stronger measures to investigate abuse and harassment towards staff, saying no act of violence or abuse is minor. Being assaulted or abused is not part of the job. Far too often I hear stories that the people you are trying to help lash out at you. I've seen it for myself on night shifts and on ambulances. Mr. Hancock said he was horrified that any member of the public would verbally abuse a member of our NHS staff, but it happens too often. This is okay. You can say, and by the way, I know enough people. I wrote a book about called Hospital, The Hidden Lives of Medical Center Staff. It was actually book did very well. It was a bestseller in paperback. The book was about some of the struggles of people who work in a hospital. And yes, I heard several stories of people who would come in even to emergency rooms and make some comment about the ethnicity or the gender of the doctor treating them. It's incredibly stupid for you to do that. Now, an emergency room, even under these new NHS rules, you're still not allowed to say, okay, I'm sorry, you don't like having a female physician? Treat yourself. You can't say that. If it's an emergency room, you still have to help them. But the idea that you can be denied non-medical treatment, that's bizarre. And it's just wrong. And it's appallingly dangerous. Because basically what we're doing is marginalizing people based upon some ideas that they have rather than countering those ideas. And yes, I believe racism is wrong, but racism is not microaggressions. Racism is not, racism is an organized system of thought that says that people are entitled to less and less respect and less common decency based upon where they come from or the color of their skin. The political correctness run rampant is extraordinarily visible in the Democratic presidential run. And it's also behind why the left in Austria, in Netherlands, in France, in Britain, in Germany, and soon to be in the United States has reached a true low point. So if that's true, why is Bernie Sanders surging? We will consider it all coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.